I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Time and Room Podcast, the greatest, most exciting lacrosse podcast in all the land, all about lacrosse, featuring my buddy Coach Dane Smith from St. Andrew's Episcopal in Potomac, Maryland. My name is Eric Bickle. I'm one of the sports junkies on 106.7 The Fan, D.C., and NBC Sports Washington. Dane, of course, played at Robert Morris, was a two-time captain there, and is currently the head coach at St. Andrew's in Potomac. Coach, how's it going, buddy?
It's going good, man. It's hot in my office right now. Other than that, it's fine.
I told you you could take your shirt off.
No, it's all good. Not maybe in the after hours podcast. but no, it's all good, man. It's been a couple weeks too long since we've been able to get back together. But as you kind of know, we've started back up school here, and so things have really been pretty busy for us at St. Andrew's, which is a good thing. You know what I mean? Between our guys doing high school workouts, our club team's going full go right now, and big tournaments coming up for the class of 23 and 22 as they start to get, you know, get recruited and things like that. And so, God willing, all those tournaments will go off. And so a lot of lacrosse, but I can't complain right now.
No, it's very cool. I mean, every time I'm on like your Instagram or Lothar, who's our strength guy, training guy, he's always working out the St. Andrew's kids.
We've strategically placed some kids in his weight room, that's for sure. On their own accord, you know, I wish we could get more in there. You got rules where you can only fit like four or five kids in the gym at a time, and it, you know, it's a whole thing, but trying to give our kids as much as an opportunity if they feel safe to do so, you know, to get in a gym, they got to wear a mask, but they do that. And then obviously we're able to do phase three workouts right now twice a week, which has been awesome, non-contact. But look, we're in a full ball mode right now, developing our guys, and it's, I feel like a college coach again in some ways, and it's been in so many ways a lot of fun.
No, it's been great. And you know, you mentioned phase three, and here in Maryland, I know Governor Hogan opened everything up for, recommends phase three for the whole state. I don't know if you saw that in the last day or so.
I did not see that. Yeah. I feel like we've been in phase two in Montgomery County for like almost a few months now, right? I mean, right?
They said,
but the whole state's in phase three already, aren't they?
Well, he's encouraging all of the counties to abide by that.
They won't.
Of course, we're in the worst county ever in Montgomery County. So I can say that you can't. So hopefully they abide by the governor's recommendations. And you get some of those handcuffs taken off you, and you guys could be 100% full go. Should be soon. Should be soon.
It could be. I mean, I you know, it's funny because it you can say this throughout the whole pandemic. Everyone has their own way of rationalizing the decisions that they make. But you have schools right down the road that are full contact, but they have to wear masks to practice. You know what I mean? While they practice, but yet, you know, other schools are non-contact, but they don't have to wear masks because that was recommended not to wear masks while you do athletics. So, you know, quite honestly, between me and you and whoever listens to our podcast, is like phase two or phase three to me doesn't really mean anything. I mean, it'd be great if we could do contact. It's not that big a deal.
Is phase three the final phase, or they have more?
I think there's a five. I think there might be a four. No, I think there's. I think
phase
there's definitely
three
a four.
Was the end.
No, no, it's not the end.
Oh my God! That's why I was. But, I was celebrating. I was thinking this was the end.
But here's my take, Eric. Is I don't care if we stay in phase two, if that means that we can keep doing what we're doing, and then when we get to the springtime, when it's really important, we got to go phase three, phase four, phase five, and power through. Assuming it's safe to do so, because what I don't want to have happen is Montgomery County opens in phase three and something goes wrong, and then all of a sudden, instead of doing non-contact, we're doing nothing. And so,
right, Well, that would just be stupidity. So
at this point, I mean, I really am just grateful to be out there. It's been awesome. The weather's been great.
I saw Lothar working out with some of your guys, and then I see on your Instagram, you know, you guys have your practice plan all dialed in, and you got everybody socially distant, but yet they're still getting their work in. It's really impressive.
Yeah, you know, we're taking it serious. Like, we're not, you know, we are making sure that we're following by all the guidelines, and there's, you know, cones. I mean, I don't know how many you should see. The beginning of my practice looks like a maze out there. There's so many cones in the field where guys should stand and not stand. And it takes a lot of work just to plan for a practice where it's socially distant. But hopefully people respect that. And it's been, like I said, it's been great. Good developed skill. I know it's been great for the kids. They're back on their school once a week, or they're on campus for a whole week at a time. And so, you know, it's just even though it's not normal school, the little return to normalcy is so good. And it's all good, man. All silver linings in a other less dark time. So all good, man. And now we got, you know, probably my favorite guest of all time, I think, coming on the show.
Right. Yeah. So we have Dane's coach from Robert Morris, Bear Davis, who is an absolute legend in the game, certainly from the state of Ohio, kind of the godfather of Ohio lacrosse. And Bear's got a great story. He started up a bunch of programs, including Robert Morris, and just successful everywhere he goes, including a title in the MLL with the Ohio Machine. So,
I love his story. You know what I mean? I love that he's not your traditional, like, you know, blue blood lacrosse, like, you know, come from a powerhouse. Maybe I love it because it's kind of my story in some ways. But and he gave me a shot. You know what I mean? He changed my life. And it's just like that's the power of a coach right there. Give you a shot. You got to take advantage of it. But that's why I tell my kids all the time, whether it's high school, you know, this sport can change your life. Coach Davis did that for me. Gave me a shot. Next thing I know, I'm, you know, doing it for a career. I met my wife. I got kids, all that good stuff. My wife,
it's everything.
Yeah, it's everything, right? It's all because I picked up a stick and Coach Davis didn't think I sucked. So,
right.
We get into all that and more, but he's the man. He really is.
All right. So don't go anywhere. When we come back, Bear Davis, the legend, the godfather of Ohio lacrosse, he joins us next. All right. It's our pleasure to introduce another lacrosse icon, Dane. A former three-sports star at your alma mater, Hilliard High School in Ohio. Went on to play football and lacrosse at Wilmington College. He started the lacrosse program at Wheeling Jesuit and guided them to a top 10 national ranking in 2004. He started the lacrosse program at Dane's alma mater, Robert Morris, where they led the NCAA in scoring offense for two straight seasons. I'm sure Dane had a bunch of those. He then became the head lacrosse coach and associate athletic director at Archbishop Spalding High School here in Severn, Maryland, then became the coach and GM of the Ohio Machine in the MLL, where he won a title there. He's currently hosts the Lax Worm and Coach Bear Show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the godfather of Ohio lacrosse, Bear Davis.
Godfather is a little deep, but
You got to roll with it, Bear.
I think
I know the Godfathers. How about that? I'm old enough to know the Godfathers.
So I want to hear, first of all, about the whole introduction to Coach Dane.
Oh, boy.
And how that all started. You guys happened by happenstance, just go, you know, happened to go to the same high school. What was the connection? I know Dane said that, you know, he thought he was a big stud in high school. But once he got to college, it was a little bit of an awakening. But what was the journey like for Dane? Maybe you can say, what was the journey like for you, and how did you connect with Bear?
Well, obviously, I'm sure Coach will tell it probably not differently, but in a shorter story. But the short story of it is Anthony Kelly was my high school coach, who's now runs Resolute in Columbus. And our high school team was terrible. We didn't win a game my senior year. So it was just an awful lacrosse. I was the best player on a bad team, but what does that mean? I wanted to play in college. And so I was lucky enough that Coach Kelly sent out some emails, and I think Bear maybe pitied me a little bit because I was playing at his alma mater. So Bear came and watched me play live in a high school game, right, Bear? And I think we lost 14-1 and maybe 14-2. I can't remember. I think it was 14-1. I scored the only goal, and Max Schmidt was guarding me. I'll never forget that because, like, I'm like, great, Coach Davis is coming to watch me play, and Max Schmidt ended up he was an All-American at Maryland. He was a starting defenseman for Upper Arlington that year. And I'm like, I'm going to have to really just really ball out. So they moved me to the midfield. I just tried everything I can to make plays. And coach was lucky enough to, you know, get me on campus and just say, hey, you know, if you want to walk on, or, you know, you have a spot, but no money, no nothing, and an opportunity, and took it. I mean, I didn't even, all I needed, once he finished his sentence, I was in. You know, I don't even think I visited before I knew I was going, but an opportunity to play at the highest level was something I had to jump on. But coach will tell you, you know, I didn't know what I was getting myself into in my freshman year. I was a, you know, a little bit of a POS, and, you know, definitely a fish out of water in so many different ways, but I figured it out by the time I graduated. I think I did. But coach, is that how you remember it?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting because we in Pittsburgh, as you know, there wasn't a lot of there are players that can play Division I for sure, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they wanted to stay home or be at Robert Morris University. So our recruiting was pretty broad, and you know, I always look for just different skill sets. You know, I think, you know, as you were part of the roster, you know that we had guys from all over, you know, all over the world. And, you know, I always felt like not only skill sets, but like wherever you recruit guys, you get different backgrounds, you get different attitudes. And I thought that was equally as important. You know, like to have that Long Island goalie, you know, that to have that lefty Canadian finisher, like those are ingredients that make the soup taste just right. You know, and I always felt like Midwest guys were definitely athletic. They had a different mentality. And, you know, I did go watch you play against Upper Arlington. Well, first of all, I wanted to see Upper Arlington kids too. It wasn't fully, you know, like selfishly self-serving. I wanted to go see some of their kids.
Well, you didn't get those kids, so.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So screw them. Yeah. So anyways, but, you know, watching a player play through adverse situations is also very important because we were going to go through some adversity at Robert Morris and – you know, I knew it wasn't going to be exactly an easy road, and having Max Schmidt, you know, who I coached, with the machine, who's great, you know, guard you, who's phenomenal defender, and for you to, you know, keep playing and not playing to the score. I think that all kind of fit in with what we were trying to do, at that time at Robert Morris and still, I'm sure, you know, they're still doing that. So it was a good fit, you know, and I think as your journey went on, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the freshman year, freshman year is tough for everybody, you know, scholarship, walk on, whatever. It's not an easy year for anyone. That's why I think we always harped on, you know, limiting the hazing and the, hey, you got to do something to be a part of this program, because it's already hard enough. No one needs to make it harder on you. And as any freshman or anybody went through that experience can probably attest to that. But, you know, as we know, the conversations that we had, you know, 2 or 3 years later were much different than your freshman year. And,
yeah,
and you know, you became a prototype story of like, hey, you know, you got to grind through some of those, you know, those low points and, you know, becoming a scholarship captain in the program from a walk-on that wanted to go home, you know, after, you know, freshman year. I think, you know, is a story that most freshmen should hear, you know, in any program.
Yeah.
Is it
true? I'm not proud of wanting to go home, but I am proud of sticking it out. Definitely the best decision I ever made. But
is it true?
It's thoughts that many people have. What true, Eric?
Is it true that Dane went back and, like, you guys were shocked sort of like his sophomore year that he really worked hard on his game? It kind of surprised you guys? Like, you didn't really expect him. That's what he says to me anyway. He says the coaching staff didn't really expect me to play, but I really worked my ass off between my freshman and sophomore years, and I think I shocked the coaching staff.
Well, it's because the bar was so low. I mean, let's just be real here. You know, I mean, I don't want to pump my own tires, but, you know, coach can tell you. I mean, it's just, you know, my class was loaded, you know what I mean, with guys, you know, that were playing as freshmen and starting and contributing at a really high level. So, I definitely worked my ass off, but the bar was set so low that I think maybe, hopefully, I surprised a couple guys.
Well, you know, traditionally with walk-ons, it was more of a you have to bring something to the table mentality, you know, like just bring something, you know, and you can't obviously, you know, you can't be a DK, you know, you can't be a drill killer, you know, you can't have bad grades. there's just certain things that you have to check those boxes. And when, you know, when we came back in that fall, Dane had surpassed all those. It wasn't necessarily saying, all right, let's just make sure Dane doesn't, you know, check any of these boxes here, you know, like incorrectly. And he went beyond that. He went to a contributor and pushing. The thing was, you know, you need to push the starters. And that's where Dane, you know, worked his way into a D midi role, which, you know, a lot of people don't find that as a very attractive position, but it is a way to get on the field. And they're like corners to me, you know, like when you don't have good ones, everyone knows, you know, like everyone knows you don't have good ones. And we were fortunate that some of our best D middies that we ever had, you know, had played offense, you know, and then sooner or later, we're just getting rid of that whole term D midi. You play midi, you know, and you go up and down the field. And, you know, I think that Dane and his class and some of the guys before him helped us in that area. Maybe not the most glorified position by title, but in our system, it became probably the most vital.
Dane, were you part of the first class or no at Robert
Morris? No. So I was my freshman year was the fourth year of the program, right, Coach? Gotcha. And so – you know, we think we won four games, and like the senior class was like ecstatic, and because you know they had spent 3 years kind of getting pounded by, you know, Schwagner and you name it.
Oh yeah, no, we didn't win a Division I game in the first 2 years.
Yeah, right. but then to Coach's credit, and you know, obviously brought in a lot of talented guys. My class, and then the class behind me, you know, arguably probably two of the best classes, you know, that have ever played there. We're able to really turn things around, and I think we were nationally ranked my senior year at one point, and then I think again the following year as well. So with that class, so
what was that like, Coach, for you? And it seems like it was a trend for you, right? Because you did it at Wheeling Jesuit, and
the program starter.
Yeah, what's that like? How do you approach that? How do you stay sane when you don't win a game in the first 2 years?
You know, my staff there, and my staff at Wheeling, actually, you know, Tim Florence and Kevin Dugan and Matt Edmonds, those guys, and then gone over to Robert Morris with Drew McMinn, and, you know, former players that came over, and you know, even Bruce Phillips. I could just go on and on about the guys that helped just build it, you know, and build a vision. You know, I had started a high school program here in Ohio at Wilmington High School, and, you know, it's really interesting. I always tell people I got 6 credit hours my third year coaching the team because I was a senior at Wilmington, and just really meeting with different professors and writing down details about the process, you know, like just everything. Like 6 credit hours is a lot of credit hours, you know, to put into something. And I genuinely had to do that, to sit down with a notebook, you know, handwritten notebook, and meet with professors about my process, whether it was getting referees, lining the field, practice planning, all of that process. And, you know, learning what I, you know, what I did, I was at Marietta for 1 year as a GA, and then went to Wheeling. And then, you know, Tim Florence was also, he was an education major as well. We were 25 and 26 years old. And we were just taking our education curriculum designs, and we're like, okay, well, if we were teaching this like a class, how would we teach it? How do we get our students to be A students? You know, and that process never really changed. And then we got into a little bit more analytical side of things at Robert Morris, and really just process focused on process based, you know, like how do we get better at practice? How do we get more efficient? How do we not pay attention to the score? You know, like when you're getting crushed, you know, by whatever XYZ, and how do we just keep this a very process based system? Yeah, it's difficult. And you do question yourself. I'm not going to lie. I'll tell anybody right now, you know, when you're not winning, you're not seeing success in a scoreboard sense. You start to wonder, should we be pivoting from this path? And we did. In some of the past, we did pivot. You know, we said, all right, maybe this isn't the right way. But I think at its core, we kept chipping away, you know, and just finding the right guys that made a fit at Robert Morris. Maybe they weren't necessarily the best player. Maybe they weren't the best, you know, whatever situation. But they were the best fit for us and what we were doing. And they were good Robert Morris people. You know, they're the right fit there. And I think wherever you're at, you know, that's pretty crucial. You know, on our podcast, we just had Coach Tierney from Denver and, you know, just talking about his processes, and anybody that wins has a process to it. And like, I just, you know, we were talking about before, you're making, you know, if you're making a soup, you know, you got to have the right ingredients or it'll just taste right. And you got to keep adding the right ingredients. And just fortunate really to be around great players that wanted to work, and great young men, and be surrounded by incredible coaches that challenged me. I think that's key, is you can't be as afraid to be challenged by your assistants. Always mesmerized by head coaches that don't hire challenging assistants. You know, I feel like you need that. You have to be secure with yourself to know that you don't know everything.
Yeah. Well, it's different. I want to go back for a second because you mentioned Coach Tierney. It's different though when you're making a soup in like a chef's kitchen, right? And you have everything you need. And then when you're trying to make it out of the back of your car, it's a little bit different. And so like, I know, you know, not to say those places
can be good.
What's that?
Hobo soup can be pretty good.
It can be good. It tastes a lot better, you know, once it's made, because it took a lot more to do it.
Right.
You know, right. You and I have, you know, gone back and forth and told, and I've heard different stories from our alumni at Robert Morris, and even some stuff at Wheeling about what it was like to move the needle at those schools. Like, in your mind, what were some of like the biggest obstacles? And I'm sure there's some stories too, just about trying to get things off the ground, whether it's, you know, having a locker room in and God knows where, not having a field. Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough. I think we're on the tail end of that at Robert Morris when I was there. I mean, certainly we had things that we could complain about, but
right. Quite
honestly, like looking back, I'm sure to what you had to deal with in the beginning, it was probably like, man, this is the best, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a matter of just fake it till you make it. You know, like sometimes a little bit smoke and mirrors. You know, even here with the Ohio Machine, when you know, my time with the Ohio Machine, we necessarily didn't have being a Jim Davis owned team, basically not having an owner on site per se. We didn't have some of the luxuries that the Bayhawks or Denver, you know, where you have the Bolins, you know, own Denver, you know, so you have certain amenities. But it's interesting because I talked to the Rochester guys. You know, we had Matt Strebel on our show and talking to him about some of the Jim Davis team. What made Rochester so dynamic? What made the Ohio Machine? Sometimes you can play that underdog, you know, card a little bit. You know, like, hey, we're kind of the backyard scrappers. We don't need these pretty things, right. You know, to be tough. And you know, it's about who you're with. It's about the guys. It's about the experience. You know, but I did, you know, I did go around, and I was fortunate enough that I knew a handful of coaches. The year I came into Robert Morris, we didn't have a team. So I was lucky enough that I was able to go 2 or 3 days with Coach Brescia at Ohio State, 2 or 3 days with Coach Corrigan at Notre Dame. You know, and I'd ask the hard questions, you know, like, how am I going to do this? You're Ohio State, you're Notre Dame. Obviously, you have a lot of resources. I'm not going to have this. Well, Coach Corrigan sat me down and he said, you know, when I took this job, I was getting paid $8,000. I had a part-time assistant and like no scholarships, you know, but it was that mentality that every year my goal was to add a little bit more and a little bit more, you know, like what do we look like in 5 years? What do we look like in 6 years? How do I push the administration to invest in us more? It was clear that we weren't going to be a quote unquote tier one program at Robert Morris. You know, it was clear. Yeah, Jesuit, the AD, was the basketball coach. You know, like it was clear that was the, you know, Division II basketball is a big thing. Well, it's a big thing in all three divisions. But that doesn't mean that we have to treat ourselves like not that we're not tier one. You know, like we need to force our way into that tier one. And that comes with smoke and mirrors a little bit. You know, you have to fake it till you make it. And, you know, that was just my mentality and our staff's mentality. Obviously, our players, you know, like, you know, we're going to play Penn State and Ohio State. We're going to sit here and talk about, you know, how we're tier two. Well, we know how that end result's going to be. Yeah, you know, we have a turf field. We have balls. We have goals. We have a weight room. Like, at the end of the day, what else do we need to be, you know, successful?
Right.
Yeah.
What made you ultimately decide to leave Robert Morris, right? Because you went from Robert Morris to Spalding, right, to the high school level. What went into that?
With every coach, you got to know your ceiling. You got to know your capacity. I think it's important to evaluate what you can do. And I think sustainability was something that I was always taught. You know, if the program has to be bigger than you, and when you leave a place, you should leave it better than, you know, what it was when you got there, and hopeful that there's enough sturdiness to it that it's sustainable after you. Well, you know, when I took the Wheeling Jesuit job, you know, I'm not afraid to tell anybody, I took that job as a $22,000 head coach, no assistant coach. You know, my assistant coach was a residence director. You know, I got him a residence. Again, fake it till you make it. You know, like, I found the job on campus. It's like, hey, come on over here and be my residence director and my assistant coach. And you know, I had two scholarships. You know, whatever. We're playing Limestone, 12, you know, whatever. They had the full allotment and 17 coaches and the admissions directors. It's like the assistant coach. You know, whatever. You know, they killed us 27, whatever, you know, my first couple of years. And then we lost him by a couple goals, you know, 3 years later. But, you know, it's that grind where I felt like even at Wheeling, I'd hit my ceiling. Like, if I can't grind anymore without more resources, like, my grind is at its maximum. And then, you know, the AD and I decided it would probably be time for me, you know, to go on. And I didn't get my contract renewed, and I was okay with it. You know, it was like, probably somebody with a little different vision and that can maybe convince them to invest more or can do this at a different capacity. And then when I went to Robert Morris, like, same thing, you know, we built it. I had two children at the time when I went up there, and, you know, we were playing tier one lacrosse. You know, we were a tier one sport by what we had done, the staff and the players. The school still wasn't treating us like a tier one, the investment. And I say that, with great respect for what they did give me. But I did know this, with kid number three and the pay that I was getting at that time, probably, I took the job at $32,500. Which, when we got into CAA, I was the lowest paid assistant.
Think about that. Yeah. That's,
you know, like, as a head coach, I was still being, you know, I didn't have a full-time assistant. You know, our girls team got into the NEC. And if you know the conferences, that's a major difference. You know, we're playing Towson, Delaware, Hofstra, unlimited resources, you know, for the most part. And then we got into the NEC later on, which was a little bit more our speed. But, you know, even after beating Penn State, beating Ohio State, we beat Penn State for the second year in a row, and that job had opened up, maybe because we beat them for 2 years in a row, maybe not. And I applied for the job, and I wasn't even a top five, six, seven, whatever, finalist for that job. And I was like, where in football or basketball, if you got beat by a school, would that AD not reach out to that coach and try to steal them, or at least interview them to figure out what are they doing? So that things started to become a little bit more clear for me. You know, I went into the athletic director's office and said, hey, look, I don't know what else I could do here. You know, like, but what about maybe a bump in some pay? Well, yeah, it was like, yeah, well, we're doing a max 5%, you know, raise here. And then next thing you know, I got the basketball coaches getting a 5-year whatever extension and all this kind of stuff. I was like, so it's probably not necessarily completely true. But I think that's what it dawned on me, you know, like, I've hit my ceiling here. I mean, we're top 20, we have all Americans. You know, I've gotten full time assistants now. I've worked hard to get all that. But I don't know if the school's ready to go to that next level. And I'm going in the red every month. You know, I'm not spending 4th of July with my family because I'm recruiting at such a high volume. When does the gas run out?
not just for me, but my wife and my kids. And I was like, the gas is running out. You know, my son has become a freshman, or he was a freshman, and he wanted to play high level lacrosse. So it just made sense. You know, like we got out of debt. It was a get out of debt opportunity. Move to a great area. We love the area. Become an AD, you know, which was a great experience. And my oldest son got to play in the MIAA, which, you know, was incredible. So there was a lot of things. I know it's a long story, but I think
it's just more insight than I've ever heard, you know, as an RMU guy. But I tell you what, as one of his former players, we all got it. We didn't really need to really ask that many questions. You know what I mean?
I would say it's the hardest thing. It was hard. Yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Sure. It was brutal. Like yeah. We still own our house there. Like, you know, I still call
spaghetti Ryan dinners, man. Spaghetti dinners. Coach Davis household.
Yeah, that's right. No, I mean, Pittsburgh's always home. I mean, I love Robert Morris. I don't blame them for what they did. They were always student oriented first, and staff and faculty maybe a little bit secondary, which to me is fine. You know, that's fine. Because obviously I went on and they found, you know, my assistant moved into the head coaching position. He's doing a great job. So, you know, they're going to live without me. But I still consider it home. I still consider it, you know, I still consider Wheeling Jesuit home. You know, like I love those places. I still feel connected. I no regrets, you know, in any decision.
How'd you lead the NCAA in scoring for 2 years? I know Dane would brag about that at times.
Yeah. Dane's, there's a joke about that somewhere. I have to tell offline.
Yeah.
But, I think Dane's two goals or whatever. I think that really helped put us over.
Yeah. It's that transition, man. It sparked transition.
You know, Drew probably will talk about, we talk about this all the time. It's one of those things where he probably hated this day the most. There was a day that we had that I went through and I was just like, look, I'm a football guy. I'm a wrestle guy. I'm a wrestler. I want to take these other sports and how do we apply this to what we do? And it just really was like, what Drew is really smart in that math and these analytics. And I was like, let's look at the previous year's stats. Let's look at where we were scoring. Let's look at our practice plans. I was like, look, football has segments. They have 15-minute segments. And we just started saying, all right, well, how many segments do you get in a 5-week fall ball? You know, where did our goals come from in the past? And we just started putting it all together and really like three, I'm not lying, it's probably 3 or 4 hours. We locked ourselves in this office and we came up with a system that just said that we're going to really practice to our strengths. And what I mean by that is teams will practice for an hour on 6-on-6. But then you go back and you look at your scoring, you know, you start charting all your goals. You're like, well, wow, we only scored like 2 out of our 12 goals in 6-on-6. So we're really wasting a lot of time at practice. Like we should be focusing more on getting better in these other areas where we're already dominating or that's our strength. I think that mentality also with the fact that, you know, we drew a 5-hour circle around Pittsburgh and yeah, Baltimore, some of these hotbeds were there, but we were just really wasting our time there a lot. I mean, we were getting good players. We were getting players that, that were pretty talented, but you know, again, we weren't getting the number one scorer from Calvert Hall. We weren't getting the number one, you know, midi from Boys Latin. We just, you know, we were never going to get there, but we had to coach against that kid. So we, within that 5-hour circle was St. Catharines, you know, and Canada. And then our hockey coach, we shared an office when I first got there, and he hands me this piece of paper. He's like, hey, this kid's a pretty good hockey player, but he was on our U19 lacrosse team, you know, national team. You should probably recruit him. So we get Andrew Watt, who was one of our first NLL, you know, players that came out of our – so that gate opened up. But they play – when you play box, you have a shot clock. So there was a style, you know, that had to go with recruiting Canadians. A lot of people thought, oh, well, we'll just get Canadians. They score a lot. But then they put them in our American-style systems – where, you know, they weren't used to that, slow the ball down, do certain things like that. It wasn't fun for them. So we wanted to come up, you know, you live in Pittsburgh, you live in Blitzburg. So defensively, we're like, we want to match what we're doing on the defensive end to match our offensive side. So we had 10-man ride. We would double team you. We would just, you know, we're going to blitz. Our goal is to make you as uncomfortable as possible. And if you're used to winning games 10-9, you're going to have to beat us 20-19 and just pushing people out of their comfort zone. And really capitalizing on the personnel that we had and being efficient with our time at practice and getting us to believe in our brand. But, you know, Boise State, they, you know, that was some of the conversations that we're having. It's like, okay, so we're in the CAA. How is Boise State competing nationally in football? They don't have, you know, they don't have the resources. TCU doesn't have the, how do we become the Boise State of lacrosse? And that's really what we modeled it after. And, you know, it was fun, you know, it was exciting. It was a fun brand of lacrosse. I think the guys played loose. They played free. You know, you're going to get turnovers. So, you know, it's got just limiting those turnovers and calculated risk. But I think Dane can attest, like, our practices were never dull.
No, I mean, and Eric, you can attest a little bit, because I know when Stevie went up and visited RMU, and I know Coach Davis wasn't there, but I can tell you, knowing the way that Coach McMinn, who's now the head coach there, runs things, it's, you know, from a practice standpoint, pretty similar. And I think that's probably one of the biggest skills that I took away from being on staff with Drew, and then just being a captain and being in the office a little bit, is just the ability to practice plan. You know, I think, I'm not saying I'm the world's best coach, but if you look at what we do, even at St. Andrews, it's a pretty efficient manner. I mean, I can pull up my Google Drive right now and show you every practice plan for the past 7 years on an Excel sheet, exactly the way that Coach Davis probably started doing it, and all in time segments, much like football. But it's a lot of, you know, you get your poles get to play offense. That's what kids love about it. You know what I mean? You get there's kind of positionless lacrosse and for a lot of it. Right. And then obviously there you get some breakdown stuff. But
I remember when we were there with Stevie, and he was just starting maybe his junior year, and he was like, yeah, I could just jump right into this practice because all the drills were familiar. You know, he just knew it.
So it's all skill based, right? I mean, you can score a lot of goals. You got to be able to catch and throw at a really high level.
when you were able to kind of go for that, was part of that because I don't know where you were in your process. Had you had a lot of success, or were you kind of able to shake it up and go sort of in this non-traditional style because you hadn't had success yet, or were you already building and had some success and that just took you to the next level?
Well, we tried doing a little bit of stall ball those first 2 years because we didn't have a lot of numbers. Right. We didn't have a lot of talent. So we were trying to give our defense a break, and we were trying to stall, you know, and give those guys a break. But
it's not good enough to stall. That's when you know you got a problem.
Yeah, you know, we weren't very good at that either. You know, so I say, if we're not gonna be good, let's at least not be good at something fun, you know, like that's and it wasn't attractive for the Canadians. You know, it wasn't attractive for a fan base. You know, it was frustrating for the players. Like, hey, we're just trying to hold the ball. You know, I think it was a try not to lose mentality, which I don't think is fun for anybody. And you know, there was one game in particular that was kind of the turning point, I feel, even though it ended up being a loss. We had some pretty sizable wins. And then we were heading into North Carolina game at home. They had drubbed us the year before. And, you know, I'll never forget, like, we were in our staff meeting, and it was like that we had made a commitment to playing fast. Like, we're going to play fast, and that's just us. Well, they were number three, I think, in the country at the time. We're sitting in the office. We're like, all right, so are we going to slow the ball down against these guys? Because I don't know if we're going to be able to keep up. And there was probably a solid minute of silence. And we're all just kind of staring at each other. We're looking at the board. We're staring at each other. And finally, it was like one of these F it moments. Like, F it. We're putting the gas pedal down. Let's go. Like, if we stall these, we're going to lose all of our guys. We're going to lose them. They're going to believe we're nuts because we've been pounding this style for all fall. We've won with this style. Yes. You know, do we match up with these guys pound for pound? Probably not. But let's make them uncomfortable. Let's play fast. You know, we ended up losing that game by 3. I think there was times in that game that we were, you know, I mean, we could have won that game. Yeah, you know, like we should have won that game, maybe at times. But it was a commitment at that point. Like that was definitely a all-in commitment on who we were and it's who they still are today as a program. Like, you know, so when they go play teams now, I'm like, you know, I know what they're committed to. You know, like I have no doubt in my mind when I watch, you know, a game online, I'm like, I know what they're committed to. And I know what they're going to try to do because it's just the it's a style, it's a brand, it's fun. You know, I think it's, like I said, it's a fun, it gets your kids excited. They don't care who they're playing against when you're playing like that.
I remember that game, Coach. That was a good game. That was the most fans we've ever had at a Robert Morris game in the history of
probably. Yeah, probably, no doubt.
It was Youth Day. We had like 3,500, I feel like.
Yeah, that was awesome.
It was a pretty cool environment. So, but they've been smarter. I mean, I think we probably should get off Robert Morris here. I could talk about it for hours, but it's like, we definitely still push a lot of transition, but I think we've gotten smarter. If you just look back to the Maryland game that we almost won in the first round of the NCAA, we did push transition, but there was a but when it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Then it became not stall ball because you had a shot clock, but you're inverting, you're doing what you need to do. Where I think at times, you know, and probably us as players more in our fault than anything, we would just go. And then like you find yourself down by, you know, too much or playing too much defense, but it's
I think they have evolved
a
considerable amount since I was there. And you know, I still talk with the staff all the time, and I think what Drew's doing now is innovative as what we were doing back then. You know, I think what they do with their open offense and you know, the way that they put defense, like they always had in different capacities and in a very difficult situations, I think what they're doing is as innovative as anything I'm seeing, you know, in the game. And again, that's a hats off to, you know, Drew and the staff and Mango and all those guys. You know, it's fun.
So how long were you at then when you went to Spalding? How long were you there?
Yeah, so I was there for 3 years. You know, my son came in as a sophomore, then his senior year. So I was there for his sophomore, junior, and senior year. Yeah, great, you know, great people down there, great experience. My son got an incredible education. You know, my second year there, I got offered that opportunity to coach with the Ohio Machine as well. And, you know, there was a time where I got offered a front office job. You know, everything, just the timing, again, just seemed to be right. Matthew, my oldest, was graduating. My daughter was going into sixth grade, you know, which was, if you know, if you're a coach and you move around a lot, there's these crucial times when you move and don't want to move.
Right.
Middle school is a tough go, you know, like if you're going to move, it's like, that's the time. You know, and for us, the opportunity to come home, back to Ohio, back to Columbus, and coach the pro team full time, it was really too good of an opportunity, but, you know, everybody at Spalding was great to myself and my family. And, you know, the whole MIAA conference, as Dane can probably, you guys probably know better than anybody. I think it was the hardest thing, probably one of the hardest coaching gigs I have ever had.
Yeah.
I compare that to coaching in the CAA at Robert Morris or coaching, in the MLL. Like, yeah, you know, those coaches are legendary and, you know, unlike those scenarios, the other scenarios I tell you about, those are Tuesday, Fridays, you know, and those waves, like you don't get a lot of time to breathe from a Tuesday to a Friday. You play BL on a Tuesday and you got Loyola on a Friday. And then, by the way, on the next Tuesday, you got Calvert Hall, then you got Gilman, then you got, I mean, it's probably one of the most unforgiving things. And if you want to prepare for those guys, you got to go play, you know, Landon, and you got to play, you know, like, and then you got everybody that wants to come in town from another state who is their state champ or state runner up who wants to give you their best game and brag that they beat an MIAA team. And when you're Spalding, you're the team they want to schedule because you're the one MIAA team they think they can beat.
Yeah. No, I mean, you say it best, man, but that is like, people ask, you know, because even have people like, you know, this, you know, there's a MIA coaching job or it's this or that. Like, you don't understand not only what people apply for those jobs, what they're looking for, but just the how elite. And that's what Calvert Hall has done, and credit to those coaches and two Robert Morris grads there on that staff. But like, to win that conference 3 years in a row, the way that they did, isn't, I mean, it's insane. And, you know, Brian Kelly is one of the best coaches in the world. Like, that's just, it is what it is. You don't win those, that conference, without being, you know, really, really.
You could also have 10 coach. Kids and just keep having your kids and your brother. Yes. Well, that's, whoever, just keep coming through.
I can't keep track. I can't keep track which Kelly is his and which one's not. But
when you're self-stocking your roster.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm trying right now. But mine's only 2 months old. So I got a long way to go until he's on my roster. So you win a title with the Ohio Machine and it didn't happen overnight, right? I think the first couple of years, you know, playoffs and maybe some struggles early on. You win a title, you're at the top of the sport, right? There's no PLL. I come over to your house, we have a cigar. And they're starting to have, as we would, and there's some rumors about, and I hear it from Pat Smith, who's a teammate, who a former teammate of mine, and he's connected in the lacrosse world. There might be rumblings of this PLL. So just tell me a little bit about what that was like. And, you know, I don't know if you were as honest as you probably could have been with me at that time, but like, you know, how'd that all go down? And because I know Kyle Harrison was so instrumental in the league going off, and he was a, and Schreiber probably too, right? They're both, those guys work full time and they're both on your roster.
Yeah. I think that was probably one of the toughest parts about it was, you know, I'm always what's best for the game first. You know, that's just my mentality because the game will find its way to me, you know, eventually whatever happens, happens type thing. But you know, I really want what's best for the game always, even if it's at the detriment of me. Cause the game's bigger, you know, it's bigger than all of us. And I, you know, I had some tough conversations with, you know, players and, I knew that they had discussed this and I knew, you know, when you're going through and you're a full-time staff, person in the league, obviously you're a little bit deeper than some of our other coaches who were contracted coaches who had other, you know, full-time gigs. So I did work with our league office at a little different capacity. And, you know, to our detriment, I don't know how much we as a league really listened and evolved with the players. And I think our vision in the Major League Lacrosse was limited, you know, by leadership about what it could be for the players. And that was sad. You know, like that, I think that was sad. So it's like one of those things where, you know, you're in a relationship, but you know, the relationship's probably better, you know, if you're not together type thing, you know, like we're probably healthier not together. And then not saying that my players and I felt that way or Kyle or Tommy or anything. I mean, you know, those guys will say, you know, I think they'll attest that some of the best days of their playing was, you know, here in Ohio. And I think they would full heartedly believe that. But as ambassadors of the game, you know, they knew that there had to be another way of doing this. Now they also will say, you know, probably the Major League Lacrosse had set up a foundation or education, an opportunity to build the PLL. I don't think any of those guys would ever disagree with that. But it's a shame, you know, that, and I think we, on our show, we talk a lot, you know, to guys in both leagues and nobody wants to see two leagues. They really just don't. Like they accept it in the summer, it worked out. You know, we got to see a lot of lacrosse and, you know, week to week. But you know, the players want to play against the, you know, each other. I mean, it, you know, for me, you know, obviously it pushed some decisions at the higher levels in Major League Lacrosse, and Jim Davis, you know, gets out of Major League Lacrosse, which ultimately affected the Ohio Machine, Florida Launch, Charlotte, and then eventually Dallas. So we see that contraction of, you know, four teams in the league. You know, well, Dallas ends up moving into Connecticut, basically. So here I am sitting on the outside looking in, you know, and I'm one of the few people that had ever worked in the industry full time and understand the industry from all angles. But, it, you know, at the same time, I could be bitter about it, but I also feel like if that's what it took for this game to find a new level, then, and I'm a casualty of that, it is what it is. Yeah.
How did you know it was all going down? Just from the league office kind of informing you? And then did you ever have a conversation with Kyle or Tom or those guys where they said, look, man, we love playing for you, but we just think this is a better opportunity. Did that kind of conversation ever happen?
Well, we had an opportunity to try to fight to keep those guys on the in the program. You know, it pushed our leadership. You know, we got a new commissioner, and all of a sudden he inherits this hot mess. And I don't know if he thought it was real. You know, I don't think the guys at the top thought this was a real threat. Like, no way these guys can do this. How are they going to pull this off? And it was real. And I was like, you know, this is real, man. It's coming. You know, it's like sitting on the beach with like that wave. Oh, that wave's, you know, 3 miles out. That ain't going to get us. Well, eventually that wave becomes 2 miles out, 1 mile out. And it's like, okay, well, we're still sitting on the beach here. And that's exactly, you know, what happened. You know, we just sat on the beach and watched the wave come in. And it, by the time it was on shore, we're like trying to figure it out. And that's what has been 15 years, you know, or whatever prior in Major League Lacrosse, you know, like reactive instead of proactive. And that is a problem. That's a problem. That's where I feel the PLL had learned. You have to be proactive. You can't be reactive. And unfortunately, everything that we had done pretty much in Major League Lacrosse was reactive. Even all the way up to our 2016 championship game, you know, we had seen rain in the ACC championship on that field, you know, and the move, you know, we watched a championship move over to a turf field and still be televised. But yet we waited till a storm came in and delay our game. And then we went and played on a crap field. Like, that's, to me, is just a sign of our preparedness for a situation that could have been avoided. And it's sad because, you know, it's a great league. There's great guys in it. There are guys that give their heart and soul, you know, in that league, players and admin. But I do believe that, you know, we're hopeful to see a day where, you know, we got one league and it's great.
And maybe Bear Davis is at the helm of one of those teams.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm that smart.
Oh, I don't know. I like what I'm hearing, Coach. I also know too, there's not many people that could handle it with as much grace as you have. Then Eric would be busting at the seams. I know that for sure. So
I'd always think I was bigger in the game.
It's because you are, Eric.
So talk about what you're doing now. I know you're hosting Laxworm and the Coach Bear Show. Tell us about that a little bit and what else you're kind of doing in the world of lacrosse.
Yeah, you know, Mike Sportini, he's the host. You know, he's Laxworm. Before there was LSN, we had MLL Radio. And he basically took probably like, you know, podcasts like your guys and maybe a couple other podcasts that were out there. And he made, you know, it was really a channel that would loop those shows. And it was pretty incredible. But when LSN came about, they dropped that whole MLL Radio and Laxworm pretty much was out of a gig. Well, you know, we had a lot of fun because I was doing a podcast called Nuts and Bolts with the Ohio Machine, and we would interact with Laxworm every once in a while. So Mike just called me up and says, "Hey, what do you think about getting back into doing a podcast?" You know, and I, you know, for me, it was just one of those opportunities. Like I told him, and the way our approach is I was like, you know, to me, I love Mike and Mike. I'm sure we all did, you know. But one of the things about Mike and Mike that made it work was, you know, you had Greenberg, who's like the journalist style, you know, and then you have, you know, Golic, who was a player and knew these guys from a different, you know, perspective. And I said, you know, let's have a show that's similar to that, you know, where we can approach our guests from two different angles, you know, like, and it's worked, you know. I think it's been fun. It's been fun. We're trying to find our way through it, but it's more of a hobby than anything. And it's giving back to the game, you know, hopeful that people listen to it. They have a laugh, you know, they have some fun with it. Our Tuesday night shows, generally current events, you know, whatever's going on in the world. That's just our regular show. But Friday morning, I love Friday mornings. We do our second cup of coffee at 10 a.m. And that's live. And we get legends of the game on. And we've had great, great guests, you know, much like you guys, you know, have had some of these other parts. But like this morning, we had, you know, Coach Tierney on. We've had, you know, Matt Strebel. You know, the list goes on and on and on. But just talking about how the guys that helped build our game, you know, to where it is. You know, I look at Coach Tierney's early connections to the game And these were guys when I first started going into like coaching conferences that were, you know, still involved in the game, you know, like whether it was Chuck Winters, who was his coach at Cortland in 1973 when they won a championship. He was our head, you know, lead referee nationally, you know, but Chuck played at Bowling Green, you know, when they had a varsity program. It's like all these little connections in history that we get to, you know, pick the brains on our second cup has been amazing. But yeah, that show is really just a fun hobby. I'm involved with, you know, I'm an assistant coach for our girls team at Davidson. I've been doing that for 3 years. This will be my fourth year doing that. I've learned a girls game, you know, through that, which has been fun. Coaching my daughter. And then, you know, I coach for a club organization, Resolute, with Anthony Kelly and Greg Bice, two guys that, you know, played. Tyler Pfister's there, a bunch of guys, and Dominique Alexander, all guys that played for me at one time or another, you know, via the machine. And it's kind of fun being in that environment there with them. And I coach my son's, you know, club team and his box team. So really staying involved and seeing the box game, you know, the club scene in the summer with him, and then the girls game at the high school level. But I think the most important thing that I'm doing, I've always had all those things are important. I'd say none probably more than another, but the one that I'm truly passionate about right now is my Urban Lacrosse Academy. I'm the executive director. Something that we started with the Ohio Machine, but once the machine went down, we took our foundation and we moved it over to a 501c3 and started Urban Lacrosse Academy. Urban Lacrosse Academy is about a year old now. We're over a year old, but it's this initiative where we're working at four different rec centers in Columbus, and we're building youth teams. That, to me, is probably, you know, giving the game to someone that wouldn't have it, you know, if it wasn't for us, is probably one of the more important things any player can do. We talk about growing the game. I think we know the suburbs are okay now. You know, I think they're going to get it. Yeah. But the rural areas and our inner city, they really need our help. You know, they need our direction. So that we just received an incredible grant from Franklin County Jobs and Family Services, our mayor's office, Dick Sporting Goods. So a lot of people are really starting to invest in our initiative now, enough that we can start these four programs across, you know, the inner city Columbus. And I mean, I run our youth league. I run our youth league through All Ohio Lacrosse. It's another LLC that I work with. And, you know, we have 20 communities and 55 teams, third through sixth grade. And, you know, that's where we're in our rural areas, like West Jeff, you know, which is outside New Concord, Licking County. Like, if Dane can tell you, these are like the boondocks of Ohio.
They're what Maryland people think Ohio is actually like.
Yes, exactly.
It's pretty much the easiest way to describe it. When I say I'm from Ohio, they're like, oh, did you grow up on a farm?
Yeah.
No, I grew up in the suburbs, but those do exist.
Yeah, I got my fingers in a lot of different pies right now, but all fun.
In typical Coach Davis fashion, I wouldn't expect anything less. when Coach was, you know, obviously – our head coach and things like that at school, but he's also running camps and Big Shot 7-on-7, which I know is a great event down in Wheeling that you used to do. And
it's actually coming up November 8th.
November 8th, we got to plug it. Big Shot 7-on-7.
22 years.
Well, I think about that 7-on-7 tournament. We used to work it as players, and I can say this now. You know, it would always be like, you know, waking Halloween weekend, freezing cold on a Sunday morning, and Coach Davis would be like. And, you know, I don't know if it's like slave labor wise, like, hey, do you guys want to come work this event for me? 25 of you, I'll buy you guys chicken wings.
Oh, yeah.
We did it. We had a great time doing it. It was like a great team bonding thing. But those are some of the coldest weekends.
Good time.
I remember that. Yeah, it was a real good time. So, well, Coach, I mean, it was nostalgic for me. I'm not that old, but it's fun to kind of hear you talk.
Great stuff. I really appreciate hearing all the stories.
I feel like he could be a weekly guest, Eric. I don't know about
maybe co-host.
Yeah. We kind of got the Mike and Mike thing going, like Coach had said.
Of course,
you're a parent that just loves his kids, I kind of know lacrosse. It works out.
I'm also the good-looking one, so.
Well, there you go. You have to have that too, right?
We're still trying to push this thing to visual, you know what I mean? Give people what they want.
Hey, Coach, how do people, if they want to listen to the podcast, how do they do that? If you want to push any social media or anything, let's do that.
Yeah, I got to look up his handle because I'm terrible at.
I think I got you. I think it's just at Laxworm, Coach.
Yeah, as I say, I think it's pretty simple at Laxworm, yep. And then, you know, he's got all of that information there, and at, you know, we are www.urbanlacrosseacademy.com. You know, that's our website there. If people are interested in getting involved,
you
know,
can you like donate to that? Like anyone is it?
Yeah, we have a donate. Yeah, there's a donation page on there. We get equipment. We get volunteers. We get cash. You know, really, there's multiple ways that you can give. You know, it's also, like I said, it's a 501c3. So that works out for some people's donations.
Awesome. We might got some philanthropic listeners, Eric.
Absolutely.
I know a couple.
Right?
Absolutely. I know a couple because obviously, you know, we got Winners Lacrosse here in DC, and that's Matt Breslin runs that pretty.
Yeah, it's great.
Pretty similar mission.
A lot of really cool organizations. We actually talk to a lot of them to see what they're doing. And
yeah,
you know, like Owls and Harlem and,
yeah.
and Charm City. Like we've connected with a lot of them just to kind of pick their brain on, you know, what's working, what's not working.
Yeah, parent of ours is on the board at Harlem Lacrosse.
Great.
And you could also
follow with all of them, by the way.
Yeah,
right? At some point.
Someday, right?
That would be amazing. Awesome. That would be awesome. And you can also follow Coach Davis on Twitter. I'm going to help you out here, Coach. Bear Essential Lax. It's at Bear Essential, but it's
perfect.
We'll put it on the Instagram post or something like that, Eric.
Absolutely. Thank you, Coach. We really appreciate it. It was awesome. That's Eric Davis. That's Dane Smith. I'm Eric Bickle, and we will talk to you guys next week.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.